Welcome to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. My name is Marcus Cole, Director of Soccer Operations and Branding. Now, before we begin today's show, I just wanted to remind you that once you've had a chance to check out our program, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. This helps you stay up to date on all the latest content from us, and it helps us get the word out to others and let them know that we're providing valuable information for soccer players, coaches, referees, and parents. On the phone with us today is Dr. Heather Klodges, Medical Sleep Lab Director, WVU Associate Professor, Pediatric Pulmonology in Sleep Medicine. Dr. Klodges, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
Now, Doctor, we're getting into the point where either our athletes, student athletes, are either already on holiday break or they're getting ready to go on holiday break. Talk to us. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the first semester for them is such a hectic time with soccer players and their sport and their academics, and wanted to kind of give them some advice and some tips of things they might be able to do over this break to kind of recharge. But before we get into that, remind us why sleep is so important and so vital to these student athletes.
Yeah, sleep. So sleep is important for many aspects of life. First of all, we know it's important for life, and prolonged sleep deprivation can actually lead, in rat studies, to death, and we have some correlates to humans as well. So we know for life and existence it's important, but beyond that, it's also important for fine motor skills, for reaction times, for memory and learning. As we develop different memories during the day and different interactions during the day, our brain makes small nerves and neuron dendrites. And during our sleep, we package those into small little components that's placed into our brain that makes it easier for us to remember. And so if we don't have adequate sleep, we don't get appropriate storage of these memories education, you know, as well goes into academics. What we learn in the day becomes stored at night in our brain. We have hormone production that's necessary, and in fact, certain hormones don't get produced in adequate amounts if we sleep deprive ourselves. And one of the most important ones to think about is growth hormone for that. So we know growth hormone is extremely important in muscle repair, muscle building, growth in our preteens and growing teenagers as well. And so very important. It's also important to get adequate sleep to feel well refreshed and well restored so that we can perform adequately the next day. And we also know that immune function, there's a lot of very important cytokines that are produced during sleep that help our immune system function, so overall health as well.
Now, with these student athletes being on holiday break, they're, you know, been working so hard in soccer, working so hard to finish up strong with their academics. Obviously, this is a time for them to kind of, quote unquote, reset themselves and prepare for the new semester. What steps can these athletes take into resetting themselves?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's kind of a catch-22. I tell my adolescent patients that during holiday break, I want them to take time to give themselves an adequate amount of sleep so that they can, quote, catch up on sleep. But you have to be careful how this happens because you want a goal of for an adolescent, an early 20-year-old person, to get somewhere between 8 to 10 hours of sleep a night. Now, if you ask my teenagers how to get that, they'll tell you they want to go to bed at 2 a.m. and sleep till noon. And that's not necessarily the best way to do it, because that can entrain a sleep cycle that's not compatible with school time. And so what I don't want kids to do is get into the habit of going to bed very late and waking up very late in the day, because that can entrain their natural circadian rhythm and make it even harder when school starts. that being said, I would like them to get extra sleep. So that's the catch 22. So I, kind of in my teenage kids, we compromise. I try to say, hey, let's try to get to bed by, you know, midnight to one and wake up between around 10 a.m. So that's a little bit different than their school schedule, but no, not so different that they can't entrain back when necessary.
And that was the thing that I was wondering of that kind of thing of getting out of routine, because they I know that you've mentioned it before of having an established routine, so to speak, when it comes to sleep, of going to bed relatively around the same time, making sure that your conditions are conducive to going to sleep, and that kind of thing. And I always wondered if doing that was a little bit detrimental. Now, what do you think in regard, I mean, how long does it take, like, say, if you do that of the compromise of normally, you know, my daughter wakes up at, you know, 7 a.m. in the morning, and that gives her an hour to, you know, eat breakfast and get ready and leave for school. You know, if she was getting up a little bit later, how long does it usually take, or the advice that you would give to kind of get back into that routine? Because I know always when we had a break of some sort, I'd always try to reestablish that bedtime routine for them a few days before they actually had to go back to school. Is that a good idea, not a good idea?
Yeah, and this is very specific to the patient. So we know that we have a circadian rhythm, which is a clock in our brain that tells us when it's time to go to sleep and when it's time to wake up. The most potent regulator of this clock is the bright sunlight that we see in the morning when we wake up. Some people are very entrained to their circadian rhythm, so they wake up every morning at 6 a.m., whether they're on vacation or not. So some people's brains are very entrained to their circadian rhythm. So I would say in those students, you have to be very cautious, because if you have a kid that has difficulty waking up for school to begin with, all it takes is one weekend day to sleep until noon, and then his rhythm has been entrained back to where his natural rhythm should be. And so I try to, you know, for the masses in general, when we talk about circadian rhythm training, we think about jet lag and traveling across time zones. And in general, for 1 hour time zone requires one day to adjust. So if you have a child that's not very entrained to a circadian rhythm, if they're waking up at 7 a.m., but you're letting them sleep till 9 or 10 a.m., then technically speaking, on average, 3 days to get back.
Right.
But if you have a child that, you know, I see patients in clinic that can't wake up for school in the morning and can't fall asleep before 3 a.m., they have a very entrained circadian rhythm. Those patients, I try my best not to allow them to sleep in, which is extremely difficult.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be a difficult situation. What can parents do to help our student athletes rest and recover during this 2 to 3 weeks that they have off?
You know, I think one is to lead by example, that I try to show my children that every night we have the same routine. We do dinner together as a family, even if it's at 9 p.m., which is not ideal, but we're very busy. We have the same type of nighttime routines, even with the adolescent kids, and I value sleep, so they see that. I try to encourage them to put down the phone, to unwind, to note if they're still awake at 11 and make a big deal about it. But then also to help them wake up in the morning, because, you know, it's harder for an adolescent to wake up in the morning and on their time off. But, you know, around 10 a.m., I'll go up there and turn on the lights and open the shades and say, all right, guys, you know, you have about 30 minutes to start waking up and get up. We have stuff to do today. And so I think kind of being proactive about helping them keep a schedule.
Yeah, I completely understand. And that's sort of the approach that I take in regards to that. You know, you want to kind of allow them to sleep in, but at the same time, you want to, you know, get them up and get them doing things and, you know, being active and stuff like that. Now, we've seen
and
a
bright
lot.
Sunlight. I mean, I think bright sunlight is very important. So your kids shouldn't wake up at 10 a.m. and go down to the basement and play video games. You know, that doesn't retrain the circadian rhythm. So get up and, you know, go load a cord of wood outside for us, and then you can go down and play some video games. You know, it's more of a up and awake with curtains open and sunlight.
And that gets increasingly difficult this time of year when, you know, yesterday didn't see the sun one minute, I don't think.
Right. Yep.
So hard to do that kind of thing. And I know that if I don't get that sunlight, and I mean, sometimes I'll just go stand outside for 10 minutes just facing the sun and just, you know, let it kind of, you know, energize me, so to speak, and just getting that, and that just it improves things so much, I think.
In fact, some of the treatment for circadian rhythm disorders is actually anywhere between a 2,000 to 10,000 lux lamp. You can purchase them for $40 on Amazon, and it's been shown to have that same sunlight wavelength effect on the circadian rhythm training. And so in some of my patients that have trouble in training an early circadian rhythm, you can actually get alarms that will turn on and the light turns on 30 minutes prior to the alarm going off, so that there's ambient, quote, sunlight strength wavelengths in your room. But also you can sit in front of it while you're eating breakfast, and it helps retrain a more appropriate circadian rhythm for these people.
Oh, wow. That's a great idea. Lately, out on Twitter, and you find so much information out there, and you kind of don't know what's valid information, what's not, and everybody's kind of different from professional to professional, just because they have different thoughts and things along that lines. I've been seeing a lot lately talking about non-REM light sleep and deep sleep, the differences in how they are for athletes. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we have 4 stages of sleep, and you can categorize them into non-REM sleep, which is your N1, N2, and N3 sleep. Those are your non-REM sleeps, and then the other one is REM sleep. So that's how we as sleep physicians think about it. N1 sleep is a very short period of time. Typically, we enter sleep through N1. I don't know if you've ever woken up suddenly with a jerk. Sometimes it's associated with the sensation that you're falling, or you have a little dream that's associated. Okay, that's classic myoclonic jerk. It's normal. It's in stage N1 sleep. Then pretty quickly we transition into N2 sleep. So N2 sleep is about 50% of our sleep time during the night. We sleep in about 90 to 120 minute sleep cycles. So our body naturally wakes up 3 to 5 times during the night. In these 90 to 120 minute cycles. So we believe, and we're learning more and more each year, new information comes out, that each stage of sleep is vital, and we're learning why. And so N2 sleep, probably more we think about is a time period of your starting to get more stable respirations. It's still a lighter stage of sleep you can be woken out of pretty easily. Then you get into N3 sleep, which is considered our, quote, deep sleep. So this is more predominant in the first one-third of the night. It's vital for feeling well-refreshed in the morning. So if you don't have enough N3 sleep, you'll feel like you didn't sleep very much through the night. It's also hormone production time period, and so this is where growth hormone is predominantly produced, as in N3 sleep. And then REM sleep is more concentrated in the second half of the night. And REM sleep is very important for memory consolidation, for concentration, for muscle pattern memory. So they've done a lot of studies that show, this one was pretty fascinating study. I think it was out of University of Pittsburgh. They took a bunch of adolescents and had them play video games right before they went to bed. And then they hooked them up to sleep equipment, and they woke them up when they were dreaming and asked them what they were dreaming about. And the kids that could report dreaming about the video games, actually when they played them the next morning, performed better on the video games than the ones that didn't have recall. So we know that in REM sleep, we practice motor patterns that we did the day before.
Wow. It's funny you were mentioning the N1 sleep, and it always seems like when my children were little, that was probably the mode of sleep I was in whenever they woke me up. Because they
Right.
come in and inside of the bed, and you almost get startled and that kind of thing. It made me laugh when you said that. There's been a lot of information out there about student athletes being sleep deprived to various extents just because of the workload from their athletics as well as their academics. And I've also seen talking about sleep deprivation and how it affects both men and women differently. Is that true?
That's an interesting question. What have you heard? Because I'm not aware of, I guess, as much male-female differences. I mean, I know for sure sleep deprivation is a rampant problem in the United States. I mean, I think the statistics now, I mean, just throwing this off the top of my head, it's somewhere around 50 to 60% of Americans are sleep deprived. So we don't value sleep. We don't realize how vital it is to all these different areas of our life and the function of our life. And so I would say that athletes probably are even in a worse situation because especially in sports that require morning practice, evening practice, than academics, you look at the time they have to sleep and it's limited. But studies show that you don't perform as well academically, one, or two, athletically, if you're sleep deprived. And really, the American Academy of Sleep Medicine did a wonderful job at taking a review of, let's see, I think I have the actual study here. So they looked at 5,300 different studies relating to sleep amount and second end results. And what they did is they divided it into the cardiovascular system, the endocrine system, the GI system, the neurologic system. So they looked at 12 different organ systems and reviewed all of these studies. They had a task force. It took them a year to do this. And they came up with the amount of sleep that we need based on end organ results. Mm-hmm. Overall health of a person. And we know from 13 to 18, that's 8 to 10. And we actually think that probably this trickles into probably 20 to 25 as well. Like, when should we call an adult? So if you're getting less than 8 hours of sleep a night, you're sleep deprived and you're going to have end health results because of it.
Personally, my son is a swimmer in college. He's a freshman this year, and his biggest complaint this first semester was he was always tired. He had morning practice for a couple of hours, and then he'd have his classes, and then he'd also have an evening practice on top of that, and that was almost a 6 day a week kind of thing. I would say, are you getting enough sleep? What kind of, when are you going to bed? When are you waking up? And it seemed like he was getting, 7 to 8 hours of sleep on average a night, but he still was waking up tired. Is that in the area of, what kind of sleep that he's getting?
That could be a factor. Then you start looking at, is there underlying sleep disorders? We know that insufficient or feeling tired, insufficient sleep is the first thing to evaluate. But secondarily, is there something like restless legs? Is he actually sleeping the entire amount that he's allowing himself to sleep? Obstructive sleep apnea can actually occur in all ages and all shapes and sizes. It tends to be a disorder that you think in overweight or obese patients, but I have healthy young athletes that have obstructive sleep apnea. So screening for snoring is a very important question to ask people that feel like their sleep is non-refreshing.
What's funny is as soon as the at one point, as they got closer to the end of the semester, his coach dropped their morning practice and he seemed to recover a little bit better and didn't feel as tired, didn't feel as fatigued as he was before. But that's certainly some great thoughts to kind of look into if you are experiencing that kind of thing.
You know, there's a lot of data out now to professional teams about the importance of sleep. And actually, there's been several professional teams get rid of AM practices or tell their not start until 11 a.m. because the data is so strong that if you're not allowing your young athletes to get enough sleep, they're not going to perform anyway.
Right. That makes complete sense. Let me, we'll wrap things up here, Dr. Clodges.
I'm curious, though, what did you hear, what differences did you hear between men and women, or what are you thinking
well,
about?
Well, unfortunately, it was Twitter, so it wasn't, you know, okay. It didn't go into great detail, but they said that they're starting to see differences that the sleep deprivation is more profound in females than it is in men, and they said it was mostly a hormonal balance type thing between the sexes, and it, you know, the lack or sleep deprivation affected those chemicals more in the female body than it did in the male body. But like I said, you know, I mean, it wasn't anything that was, you know, attached a scientific study to it, but I started seeing trends of that as I was, you know, going through my Twitter feed.
Right. I did a quick literature search just to look and see. I mean, I don't see anything that's popping up quickly, but there's a lot of literature to wade through. But that was my first thought, was it would have to be a hormonal difference. The thing is the hormones that are different between men and women aren't sleep dependent. They're circadian dependent, but they're not sleep dependent. So not like growth hormone is. So then I was still trying to reach about how, like, what's the mechanism behind the difference. But,
do you think that's something we're learning? Well, I mean, I know like, with my wife, her turning her brain off is difficult for her because she's always thinking I can turn off my brain in a heartbeat. And not worry about anything or not. And I've always been very good at doing that. My wife, on the other hand, not so much. She's always thinking, oh, I got to do this tomorrow at work. I got this thing coming up and, you know, my kids are coming home from college. So I got to make sure that, you know, I want to make them their favorite meals while they're home and all this other thing. And I figured that probably may have something to do with it, at least in my mind, I would think.
Well, you know, and that's a good point, too. Some of my patients that come in with insomnia or difficulty falling asleep tend to be my worrier thinkers, I can't turn off my brain type people. And there's a lot of really good information that cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia works very well. So if we have an athlete that we're trying to avoid sedating medications or medications, this is a great non-medication way to help with falling asleep. And a couple quick tips that I tell people, you know, it's normal to worry. It's normal to process. That's how we're successful people, but it's not normal to do it right before bed. So I try to have these folks pick a time in their day to sit down and process their thoughts. Take a journal if you need to, jot down the list. But then at night when you're laying there, this is not the time. I thought about it today. I'll think about it tomorrow. And then pick a type of relaxation technique. So some people like to paint a picture in their brain. Some people say a word over and over again. I like to direct people to progressive muscle relaxation. So this is a technique. You can Google it. They'll kind of walk you through it. But basically, you start at your forehead, squeeze the muscles and relax them, and then move to your eyes, squeeze the muscles and relax them. And you go all the way down to your feet. And if you're still awake, go back up to the top. So it basically distracts your brain from thinking and just relaxing.
That's a great point. I've been dabbling a little bit in meditation, trying to find something to just kind of be a little bit more relaxed and that kind of thing. And it's very interesting just because there's so many different things out there and not one thing's going to work for one person and, you know, work for another. And it's an interesting space out there. Before we go, Dr. Clodges, if you could just give our student athletes, you know, one or two pieces of advice on kind of resetting, getting ready for second semester, what pieces of advice would you give to them?
Okay, so the first, number one, would be to make sure that you value and set priority to how much sleep you get with a minimum goal of 8 hours. And then my second would be not to change your sleep times too drastically, although I know that these are adolescents and early 20-year-olds, and they have to have some freedom to relax and have vacation. So we can let them stay up a little bit longer and sleep in a little bit longer. That's fine. You know, and third, just enjoy the break, because as we get older, we have less and less breaks. And I think too often we try to overschedule our kids, but it's actually a time that they just need to rest and relax and not have that extra soccer practice to run to or the extra weightlifting session that we think they need, and just be a kid and sit on the couch for a little bit.
Those are great points. Well taken. I think that's all we all need to kind of look at that and you know, remember that they're kids and, enjoy themselves. Because being a high school student and being a college student, are stressful. You know, we may sit there and think, oh, they don't know what stress is and stuff like that.
Right.
But I mean, for them the limited real life experience that they've had up to this point, it's a stressful point for them. I mean, one of the things I always tell my son is that, this, your first semester of your freshman year is a stressful time. I said, because there's so many changes going on all at one time. And it takes a little bit to adapt to it. And, from being on your own and making sure that you're in class and making sure you're doing your homework and making sure you go to training, make sure you are performing the best you can, making sure you're getting your proper nutrition, making sure you're hydrating, and mom and dad are not there every second of the day to kind of look over your shoulder. And I like that idea of them being out there, but still being a little bit protected by the college environment, but at the same time kind of being on their own.
Right. I mean, I think it's probably, looking back, one of the most stressful times of my life. I mean, adulting has different stresses, but I mean, think about, if you're going to have a recurring nightmare as an adult, what's it going to be? Back in college, that you can't find your exam, or you don't remember, that you were in a class that you were supposed to be in, or.
Yeah, I worried about finals for my son, making sure that he was up and went to it.
Right.
That was my worry for right. him this past week, but. Dr. Kalogis, I certainly appreciate your time. Now, if anybody wanted to find out more about sleep and the benefits of sleep, how can they reach you? How can they reach your program and that kind of thing?
If they're interested in the southern part of the state, my office number is 304-647-6559. If you're in the northern part of the state, it's 304-598-4285.
Wonderful. Dr. Kalogis, I certainly appreciate your time, and thanks for coming back on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. Now that you heard our show, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcast. We'll be back next Thursday with another episode, so we hope to see you here next week. Take care.